And without further ado, it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker all the way from Fresno with 4 years of sobriety. Let's give it up for Amanda.
Should I bring this down? Oh. Thank you. That's perfect, I think. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Hi, my name is Amanda. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
So I want to say welcome to all the new people. Congratulations to the chip takers. And, you know, it's really a miracle that we're all in here tonight. Hopefully everyone is sober. But even if you're not, you know, it's a really just a miracle that you're just in this meeting. Yeah, so my sobriety date is March 7th, 2014, so I have about 4.5 years sober, which is thank you. It's just a miracle. It's a miracle for, you know, I'm the type of alcoholic addict, you know, I can't get a few days together. I can't get a significant length of sobriety together ever, since I first picked up. And so, you know, it's all, sorry, I'm really nervous. Okay. It's all, you know, thanks to my higher power today, that I have that much time. It's really a miracle. So I guess I will start from kind of the beginning. You know, I'm from Fresno. I grew up in a nice middle-class family. I have a younger brother, and my parents are still together. And, you know, my parents are not alcoholics. I've seen them drink a little bit here and there. My dad has, like, 2 beers a year in social settings. And, you know, I never grew up with alcoholism or addiction around me. I never saw that. When I was little, I never thought that that's what I would grow up and be. You know, that's not something that I had wished for in my life. You know, my parents gave me everything that I wanted, and they loved me a lot, you know, and so I had always questioned, like, why did I turn out to be an alcoholic? And what I learned is that, you know, alcoholism is a disease. It was something that I was born with, and it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care how well your parents treated you, how badly they treated you. It doesn't care what kind of, if you're rich, you're poor, or, you know, race or gender. It doesn't matter. It doesn't discriminate. And so, you know, I'd learned from an early age that I had felt different than other people. I know you hear that a lot. I was always looking for a way to fit in, and you know, I'm really selfish and self-centered. If I'm not like the center of attention in probably any social setting or any sort of setting, then I don't really care. I don't really care what's going on. I don't really care about you. You know, I'm always looking for it to be about me in some sort of way, you know, family gatherings or whatever. And so I hadn't thought about this until a while ago. When my friend mentioned it, it kind of like stuck with me that, like, I'm so selfish that, you know, we would go on these like family vacations. We'd go to like, you know, we traveled, you know, out of the country or like across the country or whatever. We go on these really cool places that people love to travel, and like a lot of it, like, I don't remember. And these are like the ages before I started drinking or even during some of those times in high school. And I'm like, that's really weird. Like, I don't know why, you know, my mom, like, she makes fun of me a lot. She's like, oh, of course you don't remember, like, you know, and I realized that the reason that I don't remember some parts of the vacation is because it didn't have anything to do with me, you know. She'll be like, remember when your brother got bit by whatever? And I'm like, no, I don't remember that, because, like, it wasn't about me, so, like, I don't care. And, like, that, what I've learned is, like, that's, like, part of my alcoholism. Like, I'm just so selfish that I don't really care about anyone else. You know, I picked up my first drink when I was 15. You know, I've always had that, like, void inside of me that I'm looking to fill, you know, that dark hole that I'm looking to fill with whatever I can. you know, I do that with people. I use people to fill that void, and I like to use drugs and alcohol to fill that void. And so actually the first thing I did was I got a boyfriend when I was maybe like 14 or 15, and my parents didn't like him, and so I thought it was a good idea to date him. And you know, he wasn't the nicest guy, and he was older than me, and we were over at a parent's house, and he was like, he's like, she's got some gin in there, like, you want to drink some of that? And I was like, yeah, you know, like, because I'm trying to be cool, I'm trying to fit in, I want him to like me and whatever. I remember drinking that, and I remembered feeling really warm, and I remembered feeling like kind of giggly. And, like, you know, I was really like, I had arrived. Like, I was there, you know, like, it felt really good. And, you know, I just had drank a little bit, and I didn't get too drunk, just like a little buzz on. And you know, it was a good night. And I remembered, like, just wanting to do it again. And I remembered thinking that, you know, I wanted to get that feeling of, like, you know, I wanted more, you know, Yeah. Sorry, I'm really sweaty. Start over. All right. I'm just going to go home, actually. Just kidding. So yeah, that was my first drink. You know, I continued to use other things. You know, to fill that void, I played a lot of sports. So I was a swimmer, and I swam year-round when I was 10 years old, and I did that all throughout high school, and I was on the high school swim team, varsity, and I was, you know, I did all the extracurricular activities. Like, I was busy, you know, like, I didn't have time to, like, get bored and think about, like, doing bad stuff. I had experimented a little bit with weed in high school, and I loved it. I remembered being, like, I was, like, a master manipulator even in high school. And like I said, my parents are not alcoholic. They are really good codependents. And so, like, in my parents' eyes, like, I do no wrong, and I'm like the perfect child, and I can convince them to get out of any trouble. You know, and I started getting in trouble in high school. You know, I got caught you know, with that boyfriend doing stuff that I wasn't supposed to be doing. And, you know, my mom was like, well, you know, like, we're not going to tell your dad. And, like, all of this, I was like, cool. Okay. You know, so I, like, got that down and, you know, didn't get in trouble till later. Or, like, you know, I got caught smoking weed, and I just remembered being like, that's not mine. You know, like, that's not mine. Like, I am this, like, you know, like, good grade student, like, you know, all of this stuff. And, you know, it worked for a little bit. I ended up getting grounded later on in high school, but you know, I ended up graduating, and you know, I was never like that ambitious high school student. You hear about kids who, like, apply to colleges and, like, take their SATs and, like, do all that stuff, and, like, I'm very, very lazy. Actually, I'm still pretty lazy. but, you know, I was like, I'm like one of those people, like, I just want things to, like, fall into my lap, you know, like, I don't really want to, like, work for it very hard. So whatever the bare minimum I can do to scrape by to, like, get what I need, like, that's how I've gone through my entire life, pretty much. You know, I didn't apply to college. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And so, you know, these friends came along, and they're like, hey, our parents got a house in San Luis Obispo, and, you know, we're going to go to City College out there. Do you want to move with us? And I was like, yeah, like, that's a great plan, you know? And that's, like, where it really took off for me. You know, I moved there, and I didn't have my parents watching over me, watching me, like, whatever, like, you know, I could live my life the way that I wanted to live my life. And And, you know, that's like where my alcoholism really took off, was right then. So I had moved out, and, you know, that's when the binge drinking started happening, and I started smoking weed a lot. And, you know, I was going to school, and I started working a job, and, you know, I thought, like, this is it. Like, this is the college life. Like, I'm living it, you know? Like, and I thought this is, like, what everyone does. And yeah, it was pretty good for a while. So I was there, you know, when I was, I had been there for about a year. And there was one night where, me and my friend were drinking pretty hard, and, we had left this party, and, I was the designated driver, and so I was driving her home. And so on the way home, we're drunk. We have to stop by a friend's house to go smoke weed, and then we go to the gas station because, she has to get some snacks. And, so we were driving, and I hit something in the road. There was like some construction going on or something, and I like hit it, and I didn't, you know, the car didn't stop or anything, and I was like, ooh, that was weird, you know, and then we pulled into the gas station, and there's a cop there, and, you know, she got out, went to the store, and I'm sitting in the car, and he walked out to my car. He's like, you know, there's, like, you're, like, there's something hanging off underneath your car, like, your bumper is, like, you know, like, halfway falling off. I'm like, oh, that's weird, you know, like, I hit this thing back there or whatever, and he was like, have you been drinking? And I was like, no, and he's like, yeah, step out of the car, you know, and, yeah, and it was pretty scary. I mean, I guess I didn't really, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be fine, you know, and he, one of the questions he asked is like, what time is it? And, you know, I was like, oh, you know, and I had been blacked out earlier in the night. I had no track of time. I was like, oh, it's like midnight. And he's like, no, it's like 2 a.m. And I was like, oh, crap. You know, and so anyways, I get arrested that night, and you know, I had to call my parents the next day. And so, you know, we don't know, I don't know anyone who's ever gotten a DUI. My parents don't know anyone who's ever gotten a DUI. So I figure out a plan of like how to tell her this, you know? So I'm like asking some friends before I call her, and, they're like, you know what? Like, a lot of people get DUIs in San Luis Obispo. And I was like, you're right. Like, I do know some people in San Luis Obispo who've gotten DUIs. Like, that's what I'm going to tell her. Like, you know, I don't know if anyone's been to the Central Coast, but there's like no crime there. And so like all the cops do is they go around looking for these college kids who are acting a fool and like get them arrested or whatever. And so like that's what I told her. And she, you know, she was obviously disappointed, but she was kind of like, okay, like, you know, she believed me still because I'm still that like manipulator that can just make my mom think that I'm just like this angel. And, you know, so I had to like go through that whole process. And I remember they told me I had to go to AA meetings, and, you know, I was like, no, like, I don't belong in AA. Like, you know, I binge drink on the weekends, and like, you know, that's what all college kids do. Like, there's no way that I'm an alcoholic. Like, I was not even close to thinking that that was like a possible option for me. And so, you know, my friend told me that she forged all her signatures on her DUI card or whatever, and I was like, that's what I'm going to do, you know, and I did that, and I did the 3-month classes, and I turned it in, and, you know, I made it through somehow, and, you know, of course, the next time, it was about 6 months later, I stopped drinking for about 6 months. In the meantime, I'm, like, substituting it with other things, you know, because I can't just not put anything into my body for a significant period of time, so I have to like substitute one thing for the other. So I stopped drinking for about 6 months. The next time I go out drinking, you know, I don't just stop at like a few drinks. Like I just have to get hammered. And I ended up getting caught for a minor in possession. I'm like over here, like this like 20-year-old girl, like really drunk. I'm pouring this bottle of vodka into a water bottle to sneak it into the club. And like, you know, like it just like stupid stuff. And a cop pulled up, and I got another ticket, you know, and, you know, stuff like that just kept happening to me. Like, I realized, like, I have a lot of consequences when I'm out there drinking. And so, yeah, I had another consequence. I get my probation extended for another significant period of time. And anyways, time's going on, and like I see all of my like normal friends who are like 22 years old, like graduating college and like moving on with their lives, and like I cannot even like get out of City College. Like I have failed my classes so many times, and I'm just like at this school forever, like working like a minimum wage job, and I'm like, that's weird. Like, why am I not progressing in life like my other friends are, you know? Like, and you know, I just realized like alcohol is like my number one thing. Like, you know, that's like always been way more important than anything else. Like, I don't really care that much about grades in school. Like, I stay in school just to, you know, please my family. So I finally make it. It took me 4 years to get through City College, which, if you guys don't know, is like a really long time for City College. And so I finally transferred to Fresno State, so I had to move back to Fresno. And, you know, I did pretty good for a while. And then I met this other guy who just got out of house arrest, and he was living with his grandparents. And I was like, yeah, that's the guy, you know. And this guy is like smoking drugs on the weekend, but he's fine. Like, you know, he's not that bad. And you know, I was like, I'll fix him, because that's me. Like, I'm like the fixer, you know, like I can fix any man that I'm with, or at least I think so. And anyways, what ended up happening was he was using some other substances, and I couldn't fix him because that's not how it works. And I decided that I wanted to see what it was all about. And so I ended up using these other substances, and what happened was my life went downhill very quickly. So I'll just tell you, like, I'm in school. I'm studying to get my bachelor's degree at Fresno State. I only have, you know, about a year and a half left, and I cannot stop using. Yeah, I'll just say, like, things went downhill very, very quickly. You know, towards the end of it, it's like, I've lost like 40 pounds, so my parents are freaking out. They don't know what I'm doing, you know, because they've never even seen anyone using drugs before. You know, they're scared. I'm answering their phone calls less because I'm so ashamed of where my life had gone that I don't want to be around them. You know, I had crashed my car like 4 times. I'm getting arrested over and over again, to where the cops, you know, they recognize me now. And so, you know, my life, it got really bad. You know, and like I said, alcohol or whatever has to be like the number one thing in my life. So school was too much. School was overbearing. So I had to drop that, you know, I had to drop out of school because, you know, obvious reasons. You know, it's Thanksgiving time, and I know that it said on the schedule that this was like a Thanksgiving speaker or whatever. You know, 5 years ago, Thanksgiving was a really bad time for me. I'm basically homeless, living out of motels whenever we can get money, and my mom wants me to. I'm living out in Paso Robles. My mom wants me to come home to Fresno for Thanksgiving, and I don't have any money. I don't have anything to make me not feel sick, and I don't, you know, I have nothing. So I have to get gas money. I have to get something to make me feel better so that I can make it home and have Thanksgiving with my family. And I just remembered whenever the holidays came around, it was like a really dreadful time. Like, I did not, you know, I was like, damn it, like, it's another holiday, you know, like, now I have to go spend time with my family. Like, you know, I would always dread that time of year, and I was like, well, I guess I need to try to show up so that I can, like, show them that I'm okay, because I know they had been worried about me. And, you know, somehow I, like, panhandled a little bit and got some money. And, you know, I drove home to Fresno, and I show up, like, 2 hours late. Everyone has already eaten dinner. You know, they waited around for me, and then I don't show up, you know, even an hour later. So then they, you know, I show up, and they've already eaten, and they're still sitting around the table. And I just remembered being there, and I, I think I could only stand it for like about an hour, and I was like, I need to get out of here. You know, like the whole time I'm not thinking about how it can be helpful to my family. I'm just thinking about me, you know, and I'm dreading being in there because I want to be away from them so I can do what I want to do. And, and I left. So I think I spent more time driving than I did actually spend time with my family, you know, and, you know, that's like what the holiday season was for me. Like, I hated when they came around because I did not want to be around my family. And, so that was Thanksgiving for me. It's different now, though, I guess. But I'll get to that in a little bit. My life's going really bad. And, it's just really, really bad. Like I said, I was getting in trouble with the law, and the courts gave me a few chances to kind of get it together, and they granted me this like PC 1000 program, my lawyer was like, it's really easy. Like, it's so easy to do this program. Just do it. You know, like, you have to go in like and be clean and just do it. And I'm like, okay. And I like couldn't do it. You know, like, they gave me three different chances to go sign up and do this easy program, and I just like cannot get it together to go do that. And then they were like, all right, well, now we're gonna put you on the next whatever, like it was like Prop 36 or whatever. And I'm like, all right, fine, like, you know. And I still could not do it. What had to happen for me was I had to have my parents, what they did was they basically like manipulated me to see them, and they told me they were going to give me my car back because I had crashed it again. And I met up with them, and they took me to this house, and my whole family is sitting in there. It's like my three brothers and their wives and two of my high school friends and my parents, and then this lady in the corner. And they did like an intervention on me. And it was really scary. It was like on that TV show where they all like wrote letters and had to read them. And it was really scary, and all I could think of was like, I need to get out of here as soon as possible. You know, like, this is so uncomfortable. My dad reads his letter first, and he's crying, and I've only seen my dad cry a couple times in my life, and I was like, it was just so, so uncomfortable. I was like, I can't do this, you know. And so they were like, well, will you accept treatment? And I was like, yeah, whatever's going to get me out of here. And, they sent me off to this treatment center down south in Palm Springs. And I did this 30-day program. And I remember being in there, and I was really, really scared. I think the first, they put you in detox first, and I was kind of okay with that. I was like, okay, like, I'm getting, like, free food and a nice bed to sleep in. Like, I can do this. This is fine. And then I started coming a little bit out of the clouds, and then I was like, I do not think I want this. And then they take you off to the women's house because it's separated from the guys, and I didn't like that. I've never been one to get along with women. I've had very few female friends in my life. The women just kind of scare me, and I think whatever, I can make up any excuse in the book to not be friends with other women, when in reality it's just because I didn't like myself. That's why I can't be friends with other women. And men, they do so, you know, they validate all my insecurities, and that was how I lived my life up till then. And so, anyways, I get to this woman's house, and I'm just crying a lot, you know, like feeling all of those feelings for the first time in a really long time, and being so, so uncomfortable. And like, I didn't know if I wanted to stay sober. I didn't know if sobriety was actually possible. I know people would come in on panels, and they would talk about how they had like significant periods of sobriety. You know, they've got 10, 15, 20 years. And I'm like, no way. Like, I know that person is lying, because like, there is no way that is real. You know, like, I really thought that in the beginning, because I just like, I could not see it being like a reality. It just, it, sobriety seemed really boring. I remembered staying up a lot of nights in rehab thinking, like, oh, man, like, what am I going to do on my wedding day? And, like, actually, I don't even have a boyfriend at the time, but, like, I got to think about all of that in the future, you know? I'm like, what am I going to do on my wedding? Like, I wanted, like, an open bar at my wedding, you know? I want everyone to be blackout drunk and, like, you know, and that just, like, you know, and that's, like, the kind of stuff I would sit up at night thinking about, and I just thought how boring sobriety is going to be, you know, because even though it got bad, like, there are times of my drinking where, like, it was really fun, you know, and I just thought, like, sobriety sounded so, so boring and, like, not real, and, you know, I don't know. I heard some stuff in that treatment center, but I wasn't really ready yet. They told me to get out and, like, get a sponsor and go to sober living and go to meetings and do all that stuff, and I was like, all right, you know, and so my parents, they wanted me to do all the stuff the rehab said, so they were like, you know, go to that sober living and whatever, and I was like, all right, and I go to this sober living and I get out, you know, three of my friends that were in that treatment center with me, we all got out around the same time and we were all roommates in sober living. And, you know, we just thought, like, you know what, we're going to keep each other sober. Like, we're going to do this. Like, we're going to, like, break the stigma. Like, it's, you know, like, we're going to do this. Like, you know, we can do it. And turns out, like, newcomers helping other newcomers stay sober is not how you stay sober. I mean, maybe you could try it, but you know, we ended up all relapsing together, and it was a disaster, and I got kicked out, and yeah, so, you know, my mom gave me one more chance. I'm basically, like, I got kicked out of the sober living, I have one chance to get back into my outpatient, and you know, I'm calling my mom being like, Mom, I'm doing so well, like, can you pay $50 for a hotel room tonight? And she's like, yeah, you sound great, you know, and, like, you know, I'm doing all this same stuff all over again. And, you know, that poor woman, I just, you know, she, yeah, she's always been there for me. And, anyways, let's, move forward. Sorry. So anyways, I go to the sober living and, you know, I took a different approach. When I was at that last place, like, I didn't do anything they said when you get out of treatment, because treatment for me was like this really nice, safe bubble. Like, yeah, for sure, I wanted to jump the fence so many times, but, like, I ended up staying there and, you know, I got out, and, like, that's where, like, the hard work starts, because no one's telling you to go to a meeting. Like, maybe if you live in a sober living, they're like, go to, you know, a couple meetings a week or whatever, but, like, no one's telling you, like, do all this stuff, and, like, I missed that structure, and so that's where, like, the work for me began, was, like, I had to go out and I had to ask someone to be my sponsor, and the first woman I asked told me no, and I was like, oh, all right, and so you know, then I had to just ask someone else again, and I found a sponsor, and I started going to meetings, and, like, you know, I had to, like, do all the stuff they suggested, and for me, like, service was a really important thing, and when you get down in Palm Springs, you can take a service commitment at any length of sobriety, and so I got this coffee commitment at this meeting, and I started going to this meeting every Tuesday night and making coffee for these people, and I started to feel like I was a part of something, you know, I started to feel like I was doing something that was kind of important and I was contributing, and then people started saying hi to me, you know, and I started building that foundation, and you know, yeah, it became service became really important. You know, I haven't done anything really well in my sobriety except not pick up. And there was a point in my sobriety about a year and a half in, you know, where other outside things became way more important than, you know, than going to meetings and whatever. I like to, like I said, I like to fill that empty void with other people. And so I got into this relationship. And so I had the jobs and I had the apartment and I had the boyfriend and I had all that stuff that, like, I thought that that's all that I wanted and needed. And, you know, AA became very, very less, it became less important than anything else. Sorry. So ASOs, like all these other things, and then AA is like down here, you know, and that was about 2 years into my sobriety, and you know, I became miserable, you know, because I don't have to necessarily put a drink into my mouth or anything to, you know, make me not feel spiritual or, I don't know what I'm saying. Okay. Anyways, when AA is not very high priority on my list, I become miserable. Without AA, I will be miserable, is what I learned. And so I became this dry drunk at 2 years of sobriety, and I had to move back to Fresno. And at this point, I'm like willing all over again to do all those things that I was willing to do in the beginning. And, you know, I found that sponsor, and that's my sponsor today. And he mentioned her. She spoke here a couple weeks ago, and it was amazing. And, you know, I finished my step work with her, and that's when my life really changed. That's when I got to learn some stuff about myself, and that's when I really started to grow spiritually in this program. And that's what I've learned. Like, the step work is so, so important, and, like, staying in the middle of the group is, like, that's, like, got to be the number one thing. And she said this thing a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you guys were all here. Like, if you're, like, you got to be, like, in the middle of the pack, like, we're like a pack of lions or something. No. Like deer. We're like a pack of deer, and we're like all running in like this little AA pack together. And if you're like one of these deer on the outside, you're like halfway in AA, halfway out of AA, you're going to get eaten by the lion. You're going to get eaten by the lion. Yeah. You know, and that's what I've learned. Like, if you want to stay, if you want, you know, you choose your involvement in this program. If you want to get really involved, you can. If you want to kind of stay halfway in, stay halfway out, like, that's, like, you know, you're living a little bit more on the dangerous side of life. And so, anyways, I'm very involved in AA today. It is, like, it's, like, my entire life. It's all of my friends. You know, I still have some old friends from before that are very supportive of my sobriety, but you know, I've learned that, like, staying in the middle of the group is, like, where I'm the happiest, and that's where I grow the most, and, like, I have to stay in the middle. And I got elected as the chairperson of this Young People's Committee, and so we're a Young People Committee, part of Fresno and Visalia, and there's some of the committee people in here, yeah. And you know, it's been a really beautiful thing, and it keeps me involved, and it keeps me getting to know more and more people, because there's a bunch of people from Visalia that I would not have met if it weren't for this committee. You know, and it keeps me really involved, and it keeps me of service. And you know, what I've learned on this Young People's Committee is that even on this committee, or even not on the committee, whatever, like, I still have a lot of fun in sobriety. I know I mentioned that. You know, I've laughed harder than I have in sobriety ever in my entire life. I've built these amazing friendships with people, you know, and I have a lot of great things in my life. How much time do I have? 6 minutes? Oh. So anyways, I have a lot of great things today. You know, I have a healthy relationship in the program right here, and that's only because I followed suggestions from my sponsor to have that healthy relationship. And you know, the job I finished, I graduated college, you know, I got a job today. I got a full-time job, and I got my job through someone else in the program. I bought a new car this year through someone else in the program, and I'm in the process of buying a condo. My real estate agent is in the program, and so it's like, it's just an example of, like, all these cool people that you get to meet, you know, and, like, and I trust them, you know, if they're an AA member and they've been around a while or whatever, like, I trust them, you know, and that's, like, a cool thing. And I mentioned a lot about my parents. I talked about earlier how, you know, they're very codependent, and I just walked all over them throughout my disease. And, you know, I've lived with them this last 2 years. I've lived at their house, and, you know, our relationship is so much better today. I got to make that amends to them. And my mom got involved with the Naranon, which is like Al-Anon, but like for the other thing. And, you know, and she's got 4 years in Naranon, which is really cool. And we get to do this thing where, you know, I haven't done it with her in a while, but like last year and the year before, like I got to go do a speaker meeting with my mom, and I got to hear her side of the story and all the pain that I caused her. And when I went last year, like my sponsor got to come and my friends got to show up, you know, and be a part of that. And like, those are the cool things that I get to do today. And, you know, I'm just really grateful to be here. And that's all I have. Thanks.